This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 138, Commitment Rings. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on another exciting episode of GamesAtWork.biz with my co-host and bud, Mike Martin.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
We're ready for a great show. It's a great Friday. It is a, for those of you in the U.S., the Memorial Day Friday, pre-Friday weekend sort of thing. So things are kind of quiet. Which
not
is good.
Really. Not quiet at all.
Or they're exciting. Or they're too exciting. So
they might be too exciting, but we'll get there later.
Yes.
All right. Glad you guys had a great show last week. Really enjoyed listening to it. Was fun to be out and about and not recording and being able to listen to it after the fact. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was good fun. So we've got some nifty, neato, peach keen kind of things to talk about today.
Oh, yeah.
So Let's get us started with some Internet of Things things, because
yes,
it's just, you know, I don't know. It's a thing, but it might
not
be a thing.
Definitely things.
It could be a thing. So here's the thing. Saw an ad earlier today for the Cornettos. These are the ice cream cone guys, the Cornetto commitment rings. So using the example of everybody is a software company, the makers of ice cream have come up with a very interesting concept that they've either sponsored or they're doing more with, and you'll find out more along this as you will, of this idea around Internet of Things commitment rings. Say that three times fast, shall we? The idea is that when you're binge watching a television show on YouTube or Netflix or what have you, you don't want the person that you're watching the show with to somehow sneakily get ahead of you, because that would be bad.
No, that would be bad.
That'd be bad.
That would be almost like cheating.
Almost like cheating. So to solve this problem, the team at Cornetto and the folks that they've partnered with came up with the idea of commitment rings. So you have an app on your phone. You've got two near-field communication rings that, when those rings are in close physical proximity to one another and the app, then the app will unlock the ability to watch your favorite show on Netflix.
Yes.
And if there's only one ring present, you will get a green check mark for that one ring, and you will have an X for the other ring. And unfortunately, you will not be able to watch said show. So discuss.
Well, it's interesting. So when we talked about this earlier, it was funny because I remember there was a Kickstarter back in 2013 that I actually started to fund and then backed out of for the NFC ring.
Right. This was a gesture control kind of thing where you could like wave in the air and move things around, wasn't it?
It was pretty much just an NFC ring that was successful. And I'm trying to look it up real quick, because what they actually did was you could use it for unlocking doors, unlocking your mobile phone, transfer information to each other. The whole idea was it was a way of having an NFC device that you always had with you that then transferred data or did things when it was near an NFC reader of some sort.
Right. Activated a light switch, sent a tweet out that you were home, blah, blah, blah.
All kinds of things. And I'm looking at it and I'm wondering if it's not the ring that's being used in the Cornettos.
Well, it could be. I mean, what struck me about this was not just the hook here about why you might have a problem like wanting to binge watch with your partner and only with your partner and not let them somehow sneak ahead of you. The video is super funny. It's like pretending that you're surprised. Oh, that character died. Oh, my goodness. How did that happen? I never saw that coming. So aside from that sort of level of fun, if you will, this concept could be used in a lot of different ways. And I've seen the concept, just like a plain near-field communication ring, being also expressed, and this is a little creepy, in the form of embeddables, where people are putting under their skin a small communications device with a little bit of memory and some battery and some power and maybe even some lights, and suturing their skin closed so that they can now have a glowing hand or wrist or something like that that allows for similar kinds of communication. Not to say I'm a big fan, because I'm not. I don't think that's a big fan kind of thing to do, to be honest with you. And part of me thinks that, shoot, you know, you got your phone with you all the time. So this commitment ring concept, while interesting, is almost equally as interesting if you did it just via software on your mobile device, because most of the time people have their mobile device with them. They don't leave it lying around somewhere else.
Right. And you're probably watching the show on your mobile device. So... So maybe you should just use a fingerprint reader and have both people touch the fingerprint reader.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that would be another way to solve that problem, or that you have to have both devices in close proximity. If you're streaming it on a Chromecast viewer, for example, you could put a couple lines of code in there that said, before you're going to show House of Cards, you're going to interrogate whether or not both phones of both people, or maybe even there's a concept of three or four people, all have to be in the room at the same time and on the network and live before it will begin.
Yeah, the other thing that I find interesting, I guess is the right word.
Yeah.
That I should use with this is the whole concept that what was it? I was just looking at this. Total brain fart.
Well, so let me jump in with something different. Maybe it'll come back to you. There are more things than just watching a show together that really does require two or more people. And if you approach this maybe from a security angle, you could say, hey, the president and the treasurer both have to be present in order to authorize a transaction from a particular account. So you could set something like this up that, again, uses near-field communication proximity detection to have a user authenticate, fingerprint, whatever, I'm me, and I'm authorizing this transaction. And this will work in a way very much like a digital signature and collect information from multiple people. Boy, I'm almost walking into blockchain here now too, aren't I? But that's
well. The thing that gets me, this is so in the video they give an example of the couple laying in bed watching a show together, and the one falls asleep, the other one keeps watching it.
Right.
Because it's NFC, it doesn't actually solve that problem.
No, it doesn't. To me, it's because like they didn't really think that
all the
way through.
Same room, and it doesn't solve the problem.
Right. Yeah, I've got headsets on, and I'm listening to music, and you're surreptitiously watching the show and finding out, you know, which character is going to find the golden goose at the end of the rainbow with the magical munchkins or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
And so I think they need to really think about their use case a little bit better. Either that, or they require, and again, this would be really not a good example, both hands to be that close to the mobile device.
Yeah, I don't like
because
that
because the NFC, think about your NFC, it's what, 30 inches or less that you have to be?
Right.
Actually closer than that before it reads. So you are going to have like this device between people.
So what about secure authentication for payment and transactions between individuals directly over a phone?
I don't think it works. I think and this is why if you look at something like Apple Pay or Android Pay, right? It's not just that you're close. There's some other thing that needs to occur to trigger the transaction.
Right.
Because you could accidentally be in the same room with the treasurer of the bank, and you just did a bank transfer without them knowing it because the two of you are in the room together.
Well, yeah, but you would have an authentication process that says, hey, you and I just had lunch together. I paid the bill. You would like to pay me. By the way, City Barbecue is pretty darn good.
That's a new place that just opened, right?
Yeah, right across from Bean Traders. So,
I was wondering if it finally opened. I remember seeing a bunch of stuff.
It did. It's super yummy. So if you and I went there and I paid for our collective bill, and you'd be like, Michael, I'd like to give you, you know, my share of this. I mean, there's ways to do that. You reach in your wallet, you find money. You could do a PayPal transaction. But, you know, what if there was an Apple Pay, Android Pay, near field communication style thing that says, hey, I'd like to give you, Michael, $8.22. And then I could accept it as well. So you could initiate that transaction because we are within close proximity to one another. I receive a message on my device because you're saying it's me. I authenticate that it's me. I accept the payment, and then, you know, the transfer actually happens bank to bank. Voop, voop, done, done.
Yeah, I don't see why NFC comes into play. It's not necessary.
Well, if you're solving that problem electronically, I mean, there's versions of sending email to go do that. There's some text versions of it as well.
Yep. There's just biometrics in your phone to do that.
Well, true. Those are the authentication mechanisms. So I can authenticate that I'm me, and because there's a trust relationship and two-factor authentication, potentially my phone knows that I am who I say I am. Just trying to move things, you know, across. Moving money across. Dreaming it up, right? So it doesn't have to be that way. But there might be other spaces, places where you want to have a conglomeration, an association of more than one person to go do something. Like here's another one, restaurants, right? Many restaurants don't want to seat two people for a party of six. Because those two people could be hanging around, the other four people are never showing up. It'd be interesting to be able to sign in to an app at a restaurant and say, "Hey, I'm here." Okay, we've got two out of the party of six, and the other ones then show up, and they're within close proximity as well. So now we know that party is full, and the next six top that's open, we can put them there. Just dreaming up some things. So,
yeah, anyway. No. I think the use cases make sense for that as a way of just validating people exist. But again, I think the thing that I hang up on is the fact that it's NFC,
right?
Because NFC is going to imply a certain amount of closeness of everything, right?
Yeah, so substitute Bluetooth low energy. I mean, I think NFC is important for this particular example on the rings, because I'm guessing that the battery on those things is probably pretty weak and probably won't last for an awfully long time. And maybe the battery usage of NFC is less than Bluetooth low energy. Do you know? I don't know.
Yeah, and NFC actually gets the energy from the reader, I believe.
Ah, okay.
So there's no real battery, because how would you put a battery in the ring and then recharge it?
Well,
right,
yeah,
that would then put something on it that would make it highly uncomfortable,
right?
To use and wear. And so it's just like a RF,
RFID.
Yeah, RFID. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, which uses the energy for the transmitter to reflect back. Here I am. This is my signal.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not going to have this large charging metric,
right? Okay, maybe so. I mean, you could always set a battery as like a jewel on top of the ring, and that could be your battery too. That'd be fun. So let me switch gears a little bit to another Internet of Things thing that I encountered recently in the flesh, so to speak, and I thought was pretty dang cool. And it was the Square credit card reader. So in the example of needing to exchange cash, I was recently a volunteer at a school fundraiser event where people could come in and buy tickets that they could then use for food or drink, right? So there was no cash
transactions. So is this the new reader, the one that it's not using the tape, but it's using something else?
No, this is actually the old one. This is actually the old one.
Okay, because I've had one of those for years.
The new one's promising too. Well, so here's the deal, right? So it's for an elementary school. We were selling tickets to an event, and we were selling drink and food coupons as well. So you could buy after you were already at the event, which you may have prepaid. You might go, "Oh, I would like to get, you know, six more coupons, and I'd like to get some drinks with those." And you didn't know how many of those coupons you were going to buy 3 weeks in advance of the session, you kind of got thirsty and you're like, that's what I like to do. So as a volunteer, there was a cash box. So we could exchange, you know, if you gave me a 20, I could give you change. But a lot of people don't walk around with cash anymore. You know, Kirk, looking at you here for this. So the interesting thing was, as a volunteer, they said, oh, here's a Square reader. Just plug this in your device. So they plugged it into my phone through the headset jack. They signed into the school's accounts. And then my phone became a point of sale device to accept credit card transactions on behalf of the school.
Yep.
No training, no setup. I mean, well, there is a little setup, right? But not much. And I was off and running within, you know, less than a minute, being able to accept credit card transactions on behalf of the school and have the money flow where it needs to go. And to me, that was just awesome.
Yeah, it was really funny because I was at MOOCFest recently and, you know, I purposely took out some cash so that I would have spending cash for all the cool things that I wanted to pick up while I was there.
Right.
And you didn't need to. Almost nobody took cash.
Huh. That's funny.
Which was really frustrating because I had all this cash I was carrying around that I was carrying around just for this purpose. And it was kind of like the way I was going to limit my – well, not only that, it was kind of my way of limiting what I was going to spend on. And, you know, you get kind of in the moment and you're like, oh, this is cool and this is cool and this is cool and this is cool. This is cool. And then suddenly you've bought like way too much crap.
Must have so cool.
By carrying the cash, the idea was that would stop me from doing that. At least that was my idea. But realistically, what ended up happening was I
you
kept
spent
having
cash and you used your credit cards.
No, cash was like for meals.
Yeah.
But everything else I had to whip out the card for.
Interesting.
Which was, yeah. And they were using mostly the Square reader, just the one you're talking about, which is the old fashioned one that, basically just uses the mag strip on the back of the credit card, and it uses the sound, the strip, the reader strip, and it gets the sound off of that, and it comes in through the headphone jack, right? That's
right.
Kind of the way it pulls the data in. And with the change to chip and sign or chip and PIN that is going on, it's actually a high risk transaction now because the lowest secure aspect of the chain in the transaction is the one that ends up being liable if there are bad credit card charges. Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew that, and that was why chip and sign was coming through now. Unfortunately, the sign part is really pretty ridiculous, right? It needs to get
chip
to PIN.
And PIN is what it's supposed to be.
Well, right? But it's not, right?
Well, it's not in the U.S.
Yeah.
It is interesting to see that transition to more and more cashless environments.
So tell me a little bit more about MOOCFest. What did you see there, and what would you say is some of the coolest tech that was on display?
So MOOCFest was really interesting. So for those of you who have not heard about this, this is a yearly event in honor of Bob Moog, who invented the synthesizer, the Moog synthesizer. The company actually went out of business or was bought out sometime years and years ago and then reestablished itself and reacquired the name back in the early aughts and was based out of Asheville, North Carolina at that point in time. And they recently moved their yearly festival to Durham, which is where I live. And what was really cool is it was not just a music festival. I mean, there was a lot of music festival, and there were some great bands, and I've got a couple of blog posts that I'm trying to put up that'll kind of go over all the different cool bands that I saw. But it also is for engineers to learn about the new technology that they're building into their sequencers and their MIDI, into their sequencers and their synthesizers. And I actually did that track and built my own synthesized module for a sequencer, which was really, really cool.
Super cool.
Matter of fact, I'm thinking about maybe updating our theme music with a sequence from the sequencer, but we'll have to see if I can make one that sounds good.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. They also were really into audio design for games. There was a session on that very topic. There were sessions on cognitive technology. There were sessions on designing sound using various applications. The one that I found that was really interesting was Max at MSP, which is an application that really is a visual programming for sound and video, and we'll have a link to that in the show too, where the designer there was actually showing you how he was doing ambient music videos in live shows, to where he was patching together sounds that were coming in off of the MIDI and off of other inputs, tying that into video feeds, and then programmatically changing the delay, the coloring, the kind of smear effects, etc., for various concerts. Okay. Which cool. was funny because that night in one of the shows,
did they use it?
That I was at, they were doing this exact same technique.
Nice.
I don't know if they were using Max or if they were using something else, but you know, kind of this whole ambient sound cloud and visual cloud going on at the same time. There were multimedia artists like Laurie Anderson who were there, and probably the biggest surprise to me, and you and I talked about this earlier, was the band Silver Apples, which is a they were originally classified as a experimental rock band from 1967, and they're still around. And I mean, they're playing very modern electronic music and dance music, and we'll have a link to their site. So I saw them live at Motorco in Durham, which was the biggest musical surprise the whole time. And then, speaking of interesting tech, other than the device that I built myself. Last year, there was a Kickstarter for a company called Artiphone, I believe. And they have developed an input device that is about maybe 18 inches long. It has frets on it. It has...
keys?
Not quite keys, but little toggles. Rubber toggles, and you can play it like a violin, like a guitar, so you can strum it. It's touch sensitive, pressure sensitive. It allows you to bend the strings, even though there's no strings on it. You can play it like a keyboard. You can play it like a drum. You tie it into an application that allows you to override what instrument it might play at certain positions on it, or the whole thing is different instruments. And it actually, everything that they talk about in their Kickstarter, this thing was real and it did all that.
Wow.
So it was pretty cool and pretty amazing to get my hand on one of them and play with one of those. The only shocking thing to me as someone who is not musically inclined from an instrument perspective was the $400 price tag. So I did not get one of those.
Despite the fact that you had cash.
Despite that I had cash, and you would have had to order it, and then they would ship it.
Right. Yeah, because they haven't come out of the Kickstarter yet, right? Or the initial
shipments. I think they've come out of it, but they haven't done their initial shipments yet.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, it was really cool, and had a good time for really 4.5-5 days of late nights and early mornings and rocking music the entire time.
That is pretty incredible. I'm liking this Artiphone thing. It's pretty neat, you know, different colors and hooking itself up to iPads and stuff like that where you can do more than one thing. They're very cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. So we'll have a link to the Artiphone, to Silver Apples, to Max MSP, as well as my blog entries on MoogFest for people who want to know more about it. And it's back next year in Durham, too.
Fantastic. I guess it was a big success then, because this is the first one. It was the first time it was in Durham.
It's the first time it was in Durham. It's been around for about 10 years.
Right.
About 30,000 people is what they estimated.
Wow.
So just a little festival.
Just a teensy-weensy little thing. Instrument 1. Oh, so, you can use sample tank with it too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. You're looking at the Artiphone, right?
Yeah. I was just kind of taking a quick glance at what else was involved in it. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. It actually is pretty cool all the way around. And like I said, it actually does what they said it would do. It's amazing when that happens.
So as busy as you've been with work and with MoogFest and stuff like that, I know you've not had a chance to play a lot of games. So, Michael, I want to share two with you that I've been playing recently.
Yes.
On my phone and on my iPad too, a little bit. So the first one is a game called Slither.io. So Slither as in like Slytherin. And it's a pretty fun snake type game where the objective is to go around this virtual board and eat the little pellets. And every time you eat a little pellet, you get a little bit bigger. And as you move around the board, you'll encounter other snakes. It's a live game with people playing all from all over the world. Typically when I play, and I don't play a lot, but I play it at night, kind of, I don't know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. It's relaxing. It's fun because it's easy to do. And the objective is pretty simple. Just get as big as you can. And it's pretty easy. And when you bump into either the wall, which you can get to in this game, if you go far enough, or you bump into another snake, then your snake dies and it turns into, glowing blocks of light that other snakes are very happy to eat. So if you find yourself like in the middle of the game board, you know, it's got sort of a radar section. If you're right smack in the middle, that's where people seem to gather for the most part. And it's very frequent there that some big snake will get, you know, will lose their life, and then they will have a bunch of other snakes eat them quickly, and then everybody else gets very greedy, and then they lose their lives too. So it's a fun game. You have a leaderboard there, and you can see where you are in the pantheon of all the snakes. I think I've made it up into the top 15 once.
Wow.
But only once and for a little while, because you start to like, ah, okay, this is kind of getting old. I'm just going to go crash into somebody and become food for them. So Slither.io, fun game.
Very cool. Yeah, and I've been playing it a little bit during our show, as you can tell sometimes. And yeah. It is highly addictive. The only thing that it's missing is if it had a little bit of sound.
Yeah, I you know, I play a lot of my games on my phone with the sound off.
Yeah, me too. But it'd be kind of nice to have like this ambient sound that based off of little dots that you're eating.
Waka, waka, waka.
Well, no, just like.
Well, maybe you and your newly created device could create a soundtrack for them and you could send it along.
Yeah.
There you go. So I've been playing that for a bit, and I've talked about Exploding Kittens before, which is a Kickstarter program as well, and it was the number one game Kickstarter. And this particular game is a card game, but they have also now created a mobile app, and I think they've raised enough money to create a mobile app and all kinds of good stuff for this too. The mobile app has gotten better and better and better. When it first started, it wasn't all that great, but now you can play a game of Exploding Kittens against randoms, and it's pretty fun. You select your avatar, you go into a waiting spot, they match you up with four or five other randoms that want to play, and then you go through the game. And Exploding Kittens is pretty simple. You take cards in the virtual game off the top of the deck, and when you get an exploding kitten, you either have to defuse it with a laser pointer or catnip sandwiches or something like that. Or if you don't have one of those fun things to defuse the exploding kitten, you explode, kaboom, and then there's one less player in the game, and the game continues. And there's lots of other fun stuff in there too.
So there seems to be a theme here. We have exploding kittens. We have exploding snakes, and we have exploding relationships by people not watching movies together.
I suppose some of those things are explosive. Yeah, I suppose they are. So those are two fun games that I've been playing. And
very cool. I'm going to have to check them out.
Would recommend it. And the card game itself is a lot of fun too. It doesn't take much to learn, and my kids love playing it too, because the artwork is from Matthew Inman, who is the artist who's done the Oatmeal. And it's fun. It's just a lot of fun.
Very cool.
All right. Well, Michael, what are you planning to do over your Memorial Day holiday?
Probably, this is going to sound really, really exciting, but finish cleaning up my office here at the house where all my junk got dumped during Moogfest. Moogfest. And try to reorganize it, maybe even edit a podcast.
well, good luck with all the above. I can only imagine how much swag you brought back in the form of T-shirts and whatnot that needs to be organized.
Yes.
And I'm hoping to kick back and play some games
and all that fun stuff.
That's what I'm hoping to do.
Games would be cool. Maybe some exploding kittens.
Maybe some exploding kittens with the kids. We shall see.
Cool.
All right. Well, with that, everyone, I hope you all have a wonderful weekend and or holiday if you are in a place that has a holiday. I know the UK does as well. And we will be joining you again, hopefully, very soon.
Or given that the fact you probably won't hear this until after the weekend is over, that you had in the past an incredible weekend.
We love to time travel on this show. This is one of the things we do. That's what we do.
We just do.
We do. So we hope you had a great time, too.
And we'll see ya.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.